So I'm going to start with a giant disclaimer. Dr. Tolaria Fuller was the lead author on this presentation and is our main staff person at CDC, who's been working on developing these guidelines with ETR, and she couldn't be here today, so I'm standing in for her. There might be some questions that you have that I just won't be able to answer. I haven't been as deeply as involved. I've been more peripherally involved, and through like helping translate it to places like Hawaii. But as far as the actual development of the guidelines, her contact information will be up there if you guys have questions that I might not be able to answer today. So I'm going to describe how the adaptation guidelines fit into the getting to outcomes planning process for our project partners, talk about safe and unsafe adaptations, and describe the adaptation tools and resources that we're developing. So we know that why were these guidelines, why did we decide to develop these? Obviously, teen pregnancy, HIV, and STD risk continue to be concerns that have potential long-term implications for youth. Programs that have been proven effective are the best to use, since we have some idea of how and why they worked. And we know that providers are already adapting programs, and actually we were asked by our grantees for guidance on how to make adaptations without interfering with the effectiveness of the program that was originally established. As I said earlier, most of our work around adaptation fits within steps 3 and 4 of the GTO process, although it's very important to think about changes that might need to be made to a program, a curriculum, from the beginning all the way through evaluation. And it's very important, even if it's the program has been proven to death, you feel like if you make changes to the program, it's very important to evaluate those changes and make sure that they're having at least as good outcomes as the original did. Common adaptations in the field, names are changed in role plays to fit the youth, the culture of the youth, different videos are used, a lot of sometimes modules and activities are removed, particularly condom demonstration modules tend to be removed. Some of these are good and encouraged changes to make to curricula, others take more thought, and some of the others will completely disrupt the fidelity that you wanted to maintain. Sometimes people add activities, offer in a different sort of setting, like an after-school program versus in-school, and sometimes you might need to adjust the reading level for your students. Common reasons for adaptation, many of you are probably familiar with in your own experiences. You might need to respond to community values or agency policies, fit the culture and language and literacy rates levels of your population. Some activities might not have worked well in the past, so you want to change those. A lot of times, facilitator comfort is an issue, and partly, for example, Hawaii added their STD training because a lot of the teachers weren't quite comfortable just teaching like anatomy and puberty 101, or there's a training that they have developed through this project called Getting Past the Giggles to help teachers, you know, be able to go in front of their eighth graders and be able to talk about these things. We define adaptation as the process of making changes to a science-based program to make it more suitable for a particular population and or an organization's capacity without compromising the core components. Core components are theorized to be the key characteristics that make a program effective. They're otherwise known as core elements and so forth. We might talk about them with different names. These adaptation guidelines, we have broken them down into 3 categories: content, pedagogical approach, and the actual implementation processes. And by fidelity, we mean faithfulness to the program that was faithfulness with which the program is implemented and how well the program is implemented without compromising those core components. For our project, rather than develop you know, very overall general guidelines to sort of try to fit to all curricula. We chose the five programs that have been most popularly implemented through our project, and those were identified through a big survey done by one of our national grantees. So we're starting with these five. And Making Proud Choices is going to be the first one that we're developing an adaptation kit for. So the process for developing the guidelines is pretty extensive and in-depth. Initially, our staff and ETR staff worked with the program developers to review each program activity in the curriculum. In this case, Making Proud Choices, basically, we're talking about, and coded the activities for answers to two questions. What determinants is the activity trying to change? And the second question is, what teaching method is being used? And by determinants, we mean psychological and environmental factors that have a causal influence on sexual behaviors, such as factors that can affect knowledge, attitude, skills, or the conditions surrounding the behavior. The teaching methods or the pedagogical components might be role plays, videos, lecture, and so forth. So this analysis really helped to build a logic model for the curriculum in question, and then our staff were able to extract from that the core components of the program and designed, and then the next step was to design tables showing what adaptations were safe or unsafe to make. This is a behavior determinants intervention logic model that, you know, many different logic models are out there, but our project tends to use this one as it seems to really simplify the process and help programs keep focused on those behaviors that we want to address. For the core components, by content, we're really talking about things that will, in the curriculum that will change knowledge, attitudes, values, norms, and skills. For the pedagogical components, this is about how the content is taught, small group work, role plays, videos, large group discussions, and so forth. And for the implementation, the logistics are important. The program setting, facilitators, student ratio, dosage, and so forth. This is a table, an example of our table on the core content components. And it provides, really is a way to provide justification for why a component is important as identified by the program developers, and provides examples of where content is addressed in the curriculum. So you can see that there. We've broken the sort of safe and unsafe adaptations out into green, yellow, and red light. That's our code. Green light being adaptations that are safe and actually encouraged to make because there are changes, cultural things that will keep the students more engaged, make it feel like the program relates better to them. Like the bulk of what Hawaii did were green light adaptations and actually potentially might even improve program outcomes over the original evaluations. Yellow light adaptations, actually, which changing a video is a yellow light adaptation, can be both. It takes a little bit more thought as to how it's done. A red light adaptation you just don't want to do, and we'll talk about why. And most adaptations that are made by practitioners are green light adaptations. To better fit the youth. It does not change, include adding behaviors or determinants to what the program was intended for. Common green lights are replacing videos, customizing role plays, tailoring the learning activities, and so forth to your youth. Yellow light adaptations are a little bit trickier, take more thought depending on how they're done. Replacing videos are green and yellow. Some are very easy. Some require more effort and expertise. It's very important throughout the process to make sure that you're addressing the same determinants and behaviors as the original program intended. Red light adaptations definitely compromise the fidelity to the original program, either compromises them or removes them entirely. You don't want to do these. Examples are shortening a program, because you'll have to remove content or just talk a lot faster. reducing or eliminating activities that allow the youth to personalize the content. Reducing opportunities for skill practice, like role plays, and removing condom activities. Just another example of a table. Mapping out, by activity. This is how our programs will go through making adaptations. They'll put the activity in that left column and then really look at which categories they will fall into. And as well as how they're going to make those changes. Our fidelity monitoring logs, and I know that our grantees for the project are just holding their breath waiting for these. this provides a place for program providers to record, to make sure and track the fidelity, maintaining fidelity to each of the module's core content, and not even the core content of the curriculum overall. We would like this done module by module. It's very important to both the content and the pedagogical components and track changes that were made. It's a good idea, we think, to complete this after the curriculum has been entirely implemented so that you really have a comprehensive picture of the changes that you've made. Okay. We did a pilot training. Hawaii had such a need to make an adaptation because there really weren't any curricula developed for their youth on top of that curricula having been developed 16 years ago. That in itself would have required an update. But we did an adaptation pilot training where our tools were tested and worked with through Judy's group, Hawaii Services Network, gathered together some of their local organizations, and I wasn't there for it, so you can fill in if you have more questions on it later, Judy, but really kind of tested the materials that were being developed and the guidance with the locals, and definitely got good feedback, and we'll be making some changes to how we were proceeding based on their feedback. And also Massachusetts, we had a similar pilot done there as well. And we will be following up 6 months from that pilot training. So yes, our first curriculum kit will be for Making Proud Choices. We are expecting it to be available online next year in 2009. The BDI logic model for it has been developed. They're going through the core content components. We've got the red, green, and yellow light table, and it will contain also the fidelity monitoring log and resource list. Very excited about this. What comes next is to move on. Once we complete the Making Proud Choices kit, we'll move on to the other four curricula that we've identified as being of high priority in our project. We will be creating an adaptation website, so eventually a lot of this will be available to the public. We're planning a journal article, and actually the journal article will be those general, more general overall guidance details for, public consumption, but then the more specifics will be by curriculum, and we will be doing a validation study to make sure that the guidelines, are working properly. So Talaria Fuller at CDC has been our main person, and Lori Rilleri at ETR, and they would be more than happy to talk with anybody who had more questions about the guidelines. Thanks.